and welcome to this episode of the Yellow and Blues podcast. There is only one place to start this podcast, to talk about one of India's famous wins. As usual, I'm joined by my co-host Venkat. Hello Venkat, how are you?
Hi Sri, I'm doing very well, quite happy as well.
Yeah, as I said, like, you know, there's lots of things, you know, we can look at, but obviously there is only one place to start this podcast, to talk about the Under-19 World Cup win. We'll probably go back and look at, like, an individual performance and etc. But still, let's start with the final.
The pitch was, I was kind of worried, you know, usually as a seasoned fan of cricket, let's put it that way. These low scoring games are always the most dangerous ones. And I had that flutter when they said, oh, it's going to be easier, and people have already started celebrating. If you see the dressing room, people were like, right, you know, pumped up. And that's an unusually good sign. I was worried that India might go after this in a kind of brash manner and kind of end up losing some wickets. But they did to start with a couple of wickets. And I was like, there you go. And then, so that's my overarching sentiment. Unless it's over, especially in the pressure games, I always expect the pessimist in me looks at what can go wrong and what collapses around the corner. But yeah, credit to her, and I think the perfect birthday gift, I should say, for Shefali Verma.
Yeah, perfect birthday gift. And I think that's a good place to start. I think, you know, it was a masterstroke by India to actually both Shefali Verma and Richa Ghosh to play in the Under-19, you know, given the fact that Shefali Verma has actually already played a World Cup for the senior women's team, to go back and play the Under-19 World Cup, she would have got, like, you know, sort of packs and bags of experience. Yes, India lost the Under-19 World Cup just like a year or so ago in Australia. But that would have had, like, you know, so much experience for her to bring into this, which probably a lot of the other girls probably wouldn't have. Overall, both as a captain and as a performance, I think it was a great choice by India to actually put her and Richa Ghosh in there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they went in for the, and you could see in the game, she was quite the leader, because people then start to look up to you as a person coming from our senior team. So there were no arguments. She was clearly, you know, visibly the leader in the field. And I've seen the greats like Imran Khan, you know, kind of go through that kind of presence in the field. You can see that clearly. They are the most dominant character. But that's a masterstroke. And then also, the prize money from Jay Shah, which is like 5 crore, which is not bad.
Yeah, it's not. And this we have got examples in India of how a World Cup win changes not just, just the life of the players, but cricket in India in general. I mean, go back to the 1983 World Cup win.
Yeah,
how it changed the face of Indian cricket. Pick that up in, like, you know, say 2011 as well, you know, in terms of it exploded, built on what, like, 1983 did for Indian cricket. The 2011 World Cup win, you know, made it even more bigger. And then we go back to the 2007 World Cup win, with the T20 World Cup win. That again, 2020 in India and IPL, you know, it just exploded. So from that perspective, you know, this being the first ever ICC trophy in for women.
Yeah, Under-19. Yeah.
Well, not just the Under-19, you know, even the women, basically, like, you know, for women's cricket in India, the senior team haven't still won, and, you know, this could be, like, you know, an absolute kickstart, you know, literally for the likes of Shefali Verma and Richa Ghosh. They're moving from winning the Under-19 World Cup into the senior World Cup team, you know, and with so much sort of playing in South Africa, this bodes very well, I think, for them going into the World Cup.
Yeah. Absolutely, she did say. I mean, I think that was the thing that impressed me, with because not a lot of people would go back after winning the 19 World Cup to say this is just the beginning, and I'm here to, you know, play in the maiden World Cup title for women's cricket. And I like, she was quite clear that she wants to win it for the seniors as well, and I think she has the potential. If she puts away the across the line shot, I think most often when I've seen Shefali Verma, she gets out only through across the line shots. But anyway, I mean, that's just a minor thing. But from a belief standpoint, yes.
Yeah, I think this will, let's hope, like, you know, I think we talked about this in the last episode of the podcast, in the previous ones, about how right now it's such a good time to be Indian women's cricketer, with the Women's Premier League, you know, about to start in the next month or so, an Under-19 World Cup win for India. Fingers crossed. No, we'll discuss a lot more about the main T20, you see, the Senior T20 World Cup, you know, next week. You know, we can probably do a preview show on that one.
Yeah.
In terms of where India are on that one, and also for all of the other girls who played in this World Cup, you know, I think I was reading an article, you know, talking about how Virat Kohli won the Under-19 World Cup in 2008. And then in sort of, I think around April 2008, he played for RCB. His world changed, you know, and in fact, I think there's a stat that all the players who played in that men's Under-19 final for India then went on to play for IPL. You would expect that similarly for all the girls and the women who played in this particular tournament in the final. The WPL auction could not have come at a better time. The performances will be fresh in mind. It'll definitely be, like, you know, life-changing for them.
It is already life-changing. I mean, I think anybody, I mean, like 5 crores, if you read some of the background, I mean, without going into too much detail, some of them come from really what you'd call underprivileged sections of society, farmers, doctors, you know, people who lost their dads and young age. And just the stories themselves are, like, you know, adds a lot of weight and gravity to the World Cup win. And for them, this is definitely by far life-changing. And as you rightly said, if even nothing happens the rest of the year in women's cricket, this is still a big deal, attracting a lot of attention. I remember my kids sitting down, watching the game, making sure that, you know, of course, you know, that is what is important. I've never seen that happen. Even though I think that's the sea change, you would expect that. Even in the WhatsApp groups, people are following, all our peer groups are following the game very closely. I think that's the main thing, outcome of this, is to get the eyeballs into the cricket, and money will automatically follow, and performances will also follow then from there on.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, you know, in terms of from an eyeball perspective. I mean, I think overall as well, you know, it's just not about the immediate recognition from a money perspective and stuff like that, but also the fact that these cricketers will then go on to become kind of, you know, on primetime TV and everything in terms of stars, you know, which is how, like, you know, legacy gets built. The younger, as you just said, like, you know, sort of your daughters, etc., sat down to watch and that's someone living in the UK, you know, and in India, you then kind of, people will tend to see a pathway and say, like, you know, right, you know, the hope will be, like, you know, there are more girls that take up the sport and more girls that play, and, you know, that's just the way, like, you know, growth will happen.
Yeah.
And especially, as I said, if India, fingers crossed, win the T20 World Cup in South Africa, that'll just be, like, you know, not just the icing on the cake, but the cherry on top of it as well.
It'll be another cake as well.
So fingers crossed, you know. I mean, we should probably touch on, you know, a couple of stars. The overall, I think, you know, players to watch out kind of thing, you know. Shweta Sarath. I think she was the highest run getter across the series with almost 100 average. I think she averaged around 99, scoring nearly 300 runs.
She got out is when I really was worried. when they said, yeah, she's the highest, kind of scorer. And then, but I have to say, special mention to Tiwari and Trisha. I think they came in, and the moment she had that, kind of front foot, it almost reminded me of Ajinkya Rahane, the kind of calm temperament, having a look at the ball, not being unnerved by the situation. I think that was really good. I mean, suddenly everything just calmed down, and the English team as well went back into their, they took 2-3 steps back, and there's nothing happening here. Otherwise, that 2 quick wickets, having watched that game, I could see that, Tiwari. I think Tiwari was the captain for under-19 team for Madhya Pradesh. So that kind of showed. They were kind of the calming influence. So, yeah, special mention on that particular situation. But, yes, of course, Sharawat is the top scorer of the group.
Yeah, interesting enough, I was watching the final, and she was batting, and she was opening the innings with Jeff Ali. I was thinking, he was like, well, the person that she's actually targeting, or the role that she's targeting in the senior women's team, is her partner, because the opener, in terms of, it's not so much Smriti Mandana, it's like they both, especially when you consider how youngsters are playing together, you think, well, they're both each competing, if you take away and say, Smriti Mandana is kind of the other opener, obviously, it'll take Shweta Sarawat, a bit of time to get into the senior women's team. And the biggest, as I said, the position she's at the minute competing with is Shefali Verma. So that's one. The other one to pick up was kind of Tita Sadhu. She was the match of the player of the match in the final. When I was watching the game, they obviously interviewed her mid innings. And they asked her the question, well, because India like to do with the women's, or at least the women's, they now tend to go like 2 seamers. Here she was the lone seamer.
Yeah.
The seamer, and to come up and pick, because India go spin heavy. Mm. And to be fair, that pitch was holding and turning, etc. Yeah. So to come in as a pace bowler there,
I thought it was a good answer as well. The interviewer asked, "Are you feeling alone?" She said, "They are all my team. I don't feel alone." Yet. So, I think very mature interview as well for a youngster, 18 years old. So that's a pretty level-headed response as well.
So that was good. I suppose the other one we should probably mention is the coach. Nushin Al-Khadi, obviously, I think the last time she probably played a final was the 2005 World Cup, which India lost against Australia. I mean, losing against Australia, both in men's and women's, is kind of, well, definitely more in the women's, is it's almost a standard. So for her, to come back and win with these girls the first title, I think, if I remember, I think Nushin Al-Khadi was India's first T20I women's player. I was looking up her stats and stuff like that. She T20I number one, when it comes to, because obviously that would probably be in the fact that India bowled first, and she was the first bowler, so that's probably why she would have got number one in terms of that. But yeah, for her to win, I'm really really hoping the likes of Richa Ghosh and Shefali take this into the main series. And perform, we'll definitely touch about that. India's group on the sort of slightly moving tack to the main World Cup starting on 10th of February. Yeah. This group is England, Ireland, Pakistan, and West Indies. You think from that group, India should get out?
Unscathed.
I won't probably go to unscathed, but with England being there. We'll look at the kind of the team and the players and everything else, hopefully of next week. But great, great achievement for India. Congratulations to the under 19 women's team. And hopefully, like, you know, a lot of them go on and prosper and play for India.
Yep.
Just talking about kind of low scoring matches, then from there, you know, nice segue to the second. We'll look at the first T20 in a minute. But just segueing to the second T20I. Mm-hmm. The men's scraped through to like get to 100.
yeah, that was an interesting match. I mean, you wouldn't expect them to, you know, kind of lose 4 wickets to scrape through for 100 runs. Everybody almost on Nico Yokoli made the pitch curator, the villain, and a poor guy has taken the brunt. But yeah, I mean, that pitch was quite grippy. You can see Chahal getting wicket, you know, Washington Sundar, you know, Kuldeep Yadav, a couple of, and our no ball specialist, Ashdeep Singh, as well. Yeah, I'm giving a tough time, but he bowled that well in that game at least. Yeah, I mean, what do you think about really that the pitch curator getting fired almost immediately after the game?
Yeah, I think it's a knee-jerk reaction to Hardik Pandya's statement. You know, he came out straight after the thing. I don't know whether, you know, the fact that India lost the first T20 and then potentially, which meant, like, you know, if they had lost this one, they would have lost the series. So yeah, that obviously, like, you know, that's probably prompted this. Is kind of the way my take of it is, if you read the press release or some of the things, it's, you know, it kind of says a lot of domestic cricket had already been played on the center wicket side of the T20, yeah, and the curator should have left one or two strips. Sure, yeah, he should have left. You know, mistakes happen. You know, at the end of the day, he's human. There's also this thing about, like, the surface had been overused. Obviously, there's quite a bit of Ranji Trophy that's been recently played. The Vijay Hazare Trophy before that. So there's quite a bit of domestic played.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you come to that. I still think it's kind of an overreaction, you know.
Yeah, even if it's a right reaction, Srini, I think I would have given it some time. That's my perspective. But yeah, sorry to interject. Go ahead.
No, Srini, go on. I was just going to say, like, you know, this is not the first time that, you know, there's been a poor pitch prepared. Nobody basically goes out to prepare a poor pitch.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think you have a perspective. I think even Bracewell, I did say it's good for world cricket to have different pitches. Of course it is. I mean, if when England complained about some of the pitches when there was this
the Ahmedabad game.
Everybody came back and defended. I mean, almost, and said, oh, you can't play spin. I do think, I mean, yeah, this was not diabolical. It was all right. I mean, it was not the best sporting wicket. You wouldn't get 150 here quite easily.
No, but my point though is, like, you know, so you take, yeah, I get it. Like, you know, T20I, for example, is all about fours and sixes, and we see that in, like, you know, not just the T20I, any T20 game, you know, across, whether it's league cricket, like the domestic, the IPLs and the franchise leagues, or international cricket, it's always about fours and sixes. There's, like, you know, plenty of action. That's always. But this kind of cricket, the odd game where the batsmen struggle and, you know, struggle really bad and the bowlers, it still is, like, you know, it's interesting. It's gripping cricket. It wasn't like, you know, where one team scored, like, you know, 150 runs and then the pitch got so worse that it's a bit like due. It's not like, you know, due factor where it was the same pitch for both teams.
Yeah, just because, I think, yeah.
India played second, and I think it's kind of unfair. Well, that's my view. It's unfair to have been sacked. It's
definitely unfair. I think we all are on the same page. I don't think curators are not the most, you know, usually not the most economically well-to-do. And having that bad press isn't going to help him, poor guy. But anyway, I can only empathize with him. New Zealand used 8 bowlers in that game. something that I thought, yeah.
They were literally like, you know, searching for who could bowl
slow.
I think if they had, they, you know, if they could get the wicketkeeper as well, if they had another 20 runs, they would have probably got the wicketkeeper to like take his pads and gloves and see if he can roll his arm over.
India themselves bowled seven bowlers in that game. But yeah, I think it is not good for Indian cricket. And Indian cricket's image, first of all, Tina kind of go back and complain about the pitch on the press. It comes across as silly. What if you lose this entire series? It's not a big deal. There's nothing riding on that. You need to think about it in the context. But I wouldn't take it that close, 19.5, to score the 101. That was just cutting it too fine.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think the game in Ranchi as well, you know, again, Hardik Pandya obviously complained about the pitch as well. But the fact there, like, you know, because there was runs scored, there was like 170 odd runs that was scored in that game. Not much, you know, both teams, if you looked at it, like New Zealand scored 176, India chased and scored 150 plus. Yeah. And even though Hardik Pandya complained about the pitch there as well, you know, nothing much happened in terms of the curator. No, I don't know whether, you know, it's because, that's Dhoni's kind of no hometown and stuff like that. you don't just kind of go in there and say, like sacking the curator, etc. and stuff like that. Whereas probably there is not much from a Lucknow perspective.
That's an interesting this thing. But what concerns me here is, also between these two games, moving on from the pitch issue. I think Ishan Kishan's form, I think I saw a tweet or post somewhere, last 10 OD or T20s, he's not been delivering, and you have Prithvi Shaw waiting in the wings as well. So that's something to be looked at. But we don't have many T20 internationals coming, so I think people will be just waiting for IPL right now.
I mean the World Cup is 2024. I think the focus is all about the ODI World Cup, and that's pretty much everyone looking at. And it's up until the end of the ODI World Cup is when, you know, you've got two IPLs before the next World Cup, so there's probably, like, you know, it's clear, like, you know, I again Hardik Pandya sort of, they haven't really said, like, you know, anything about Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli in terms of saying, right, their T20 career is done. You know, Hardik Pandya is now the captain. It's still kind of, I would probably say Hardik Pandya is standing captain. You know, Rohit Sharma is still the white ball captain.
Yeah.
Because he's not playing, Hardik Pandya is the captain. But realistically, if you look at it, kind of where it's going is, Hardik Pandya is now the de facto T20 captain, and Rohit Sharma test on the ODI. So whether Hardik Pandya is trying to stamp his authority and saying, like, you know, what's the kind of pitches he's expecting for T20? I mean, all of these things come in to kind of, you know, the discussion. Obviously, player coming in and kind of, like, you know, establishing. The one thing that I'm still not convinced about is Hardik Pandya opening the bowling in the T20s. Like, you know, I genuinely don't believe he's you've got the likes of Shivam Mavi and Umran Malik around in front of them, Hardik Pandya coming in and opening the bowling. I'm a bit skeptical, you know.
Yeah, I think in my view, it's a different fine line between leading from the front and I think and trusting your team to do the job. Right, I think he's not yet found that balance. I do see that even in his approach, he wants to be, you know, kind of leading from the front, which is good. But as you rightly said, wouldn't be. Yeah, if you're a really good all rounder, you can always, you know, give the first few overs to, and if they get hit, you always have the option of turning up on the second or third over.
Yeah. So. it's yeah, we'll see how it goes further, no, whether it continues on that path of like, you know, sort of opening the bowling. Or, you know, he decides to, like, you know, change. Well, it'd be interesting to see. And I mean, equally, like, no, it'd be interesting to see the in the IPL as well.
Yeah.
His take on that one. Because I'm trying to remember back to the Gujarat Titans, you know, whether I can't remember Hardik Pandya opening the bowling a lot. He obviously bowled a lot of, you know, for the Gujarat Titans. But I don't remember, like, you know, the him.
Yeah, I think he came back from the injury, remember, and then, you know, people, you know, and the captains have been hesitant to use him as a frontline bowler. But now that he's got his, you know, kind of chance, he's just flexing his muscles and saying, yeah, I'm here.
Maybe we'll see, like, you know, how that pans out going forward. But yeah, there is a good opportunity for New Zealand to, like, you know, win the series. At the point of this recording, obviously the game is tomorrow, so maybe by the time this podcast drops, the final game of the series will have been finished.
What's your prediction, Srini? What's your prediction, considering the game is...
Well, the game is in Ahmedabad, so...
yeah.
What's my prediction for Ahmedabad? I think that's it'd be, well, depending on, like, you know, I suppose what the pitch will be like. If it turns out Ahmedabad should be the Gujarat Titans' home.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah,
weather is fair. Last three or four games have been producing five games. I think produced excess of 160. So it's going to be a high scoring thriller with the edge for people. Team batting second because of you. Let's see.
Possibly. Well, although we are coming towards, well, we're still like the back end of January, you know, early February-ish. Yeah. So I don't know how much you will be as a factor. Well, the last two games, you know, in terms of spin. But yeah, I think Hardik will want to, like, stamp authority and probably win. I think India will win. Yeah, that's, you know, long-winded way of saying, but my production probably is, look, no, India will win. I mean, you know, like in T20, it's a toss of a coin. It's a ball. It's like
anybody's game.
It's anybody's game. It's like, you know, Ashdeep Singh balls, couple of no balls and free hits. And, like, you know, the game's shifted. So who knows? Or Hardik Pandya gets a couple of sixes and the game's shifted. So, but I hope, like, you know, India will win. Obviously, then there is a good break for them, you know, before they get to the IPL sort of thing. New Zealand will obviously hope, like, you know, that they get a series win. So we'll see. I think that's probably, well, a couple of other news in general. I know you picked up the Lucknow one. It's the fact, you know, from a Chennai Super Kings perspective, Ajinkya Rahane, he's coming over to Leicester to play the 2023 County Championship. So post, I think after the IPL finishes, he's coming over to Leicester. So maybe an opportunity for us to, like, you know. So that's probably one to keep an eye out for us. That's pretty much, you know, in terms of this episode of the podcast. As I said, next week we probably want to look closer, like, you know, preview the Women's T20 World Cup, but also the start of the Border Gavaskar Trophy. We'll look at both the Australian and the Indian squad.
Yeah.
And see how what to expect over the next four test matches that India need to win at least three of them to qualify for the World Test Championship. So until then, if you like the sound of this podcast, do like and leave your reviews and comments on any of the podcast apps that you download from Google Podcasts, you know, Apple, Spotify, etc. As usual, we are also on Twitter, so at the Yellow and Blue. So do leave us a comment, and we'll look forward to until the next episode. It's goodbye from me and Venkat. Whatever you're doing, have a good one.